Hey, it's another episode of Snipes and Stripes with my partner, Jeremy Roenick. I'm Tim Peel. Unfortunately, JR is traveling in Europe right now, but I'm really excited tonight. I've got three guests coming on. Pete Weber, the longtime play-by-play man for the Nashville Predators, one of my favorite guys that I've got to know over the years. Jimmy Fox from the LA Kings and Joe Smith from The Athletic, who covers the Minnesota Wild and covered the Tampa Bay Lightning for a long time. First of all, I want to thank our sponsors, JR's Whiskey in the Wild. Please go out and buy a bottle of it today. It's delicious whiskey. Second of all is the new neck guard that I've started with Ray Barilli, the longtime trainer of the St. Louis Blues. We are approved by the National Hockey League, and it came out, they sent a letter to all 32 teams the other day that protected neck guards. The neck guard that Ray and I developed is actually the number one cut resistant neck guard on the market. So we're excited that NHL players are starting to use that as well. Also to Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Thank you very much to Bet Online. I am so excited, Pete. I've known you since I came in the National Hockey League. I came in 98, first year pro, first year full-time in the NHL was 2000, and I got to know you really with the Nashville Predators, and I would pop in and steal a coffee from the media room because our referee's room was right beside it, and you're one of the nicest people that I've ever met through hockey. The only other person that is, I think, is nicer than you might be your wife, Claudia, and I just want to ask you, how's Claudia doing?
She's doing well. Matter of fact, she just walked in the house. So
good.
Happy to hear about that and your rating of her. And I'm never going to forget you. You were the first call I got the day I had my cardiac event back in 2014 in Minnesota.
Wow. I forgot all about that, to be honest. Thank you very much. That's incredible. And your health is good now?
Yes, it is. I underwent brain surgery in January last year.
Yeah.
Nothing fell out. And they put a shunt in, and I've got my balance back, and that's absolutely great.
That's phenomenal. That is awesome. I didn't know, you mentioned it before the show, I didn't know that you worked with Jim Fox when you were in L.A.
Yeah, he was, it was Jim Fox, Greg Therrien, and Larry Murphy, the rookie class that came
right
in that 1 year. And they were a fantastic group of young men, I got to tell you that much.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, let's get into the Predators. I don't know if you are the same feeling, but I don't think I was alone in listening to we always listen to the so-called experts in Sportsnet and the different channels in Canada and around the league. And I think everybody kind of thought Nashville was retooling. And did you think that they would be playing as well as they, did you kind of think, hey, we might be going not a rebuild, but a little bit of a retool? And are you surprised a little bit where they're at so quickly?
Yes, because I got to tell you, you lose that game in mid-February, 9-2 to the Dallas Stars.
Oh, geez.
And then go on an 18-game unbeaten streak. Yeah, that's obviously the thing that the refreshing sort of slap to the face that you needed. That was absolutely incredible to me. And in many ways, it remains that way in my mind. They found a way to get to the point, and they're using one word that is key to their success, and that is relentless. Being relentless, never giving up, going after it. And I've gotten those comments from other teams, their coaches, their players, their broadcasters afterward. The Predators are pretty well totally embraced that concept.
Well, as you know, that 9-2 game was at home, and I couldn't believe it when I was seeing the score come across. Yeah. It was unbelievable. And then you find out that whether it was Barry Trotz or Andrew Brunette, I don't know, you may know, but came in and said, you know what, your trip to the Sphere in Vegas to see U2 is now canceled. Yeah. That was gutsy and took a lot of balls for whoever made that decision. But I know you will agree with me on this. The general manager, you know, I always had a tremendous respect for David Poile. Yep. But Barry Trotz is one of the really, really good people you meet in this game. And a quick story, my last season, I had a few weeks left before, ironically, my hot mic incident in Nashville with you. But I'm working the Islanders game in Long Island, and I wasn't going to see Barry again. And I always had so much respect for Barry. And I went up to the bench, and the whole bench is sitting there, and they can hear me. And I said, hey, guys, I'm Barry. I'm not going to see you again. And I just want to say I would work 74, because we work 74 games, 74 games a year with you as the head coach, because he was such a pro. If he yelled at you, you definitely had screwed up. You know what I mean? Like, you knew that, and it warranted a trip over to talk to Barry because he was such a pro. And I see that filtering down in the organization. And a guy that I think is getting overlooked right now, because you hear of Tortorella, Spencer Carberry, maybe Rick Tocchet, different guys for Coach of the Year, is Andrew Brunette. Andrew Brunette, I've said it to JR about a month ago. Pete, I said Andrew Brunette, in my mind, is a big reason why the Preds are where they're at.
Well, he's in my top three for the Jack Adams Award. Yep. Ballot, which had to be in by Friday of this week, and I filled it out the first day it became available for me. What he has done with this team, I think, is absolutely remarkable, because of that entire thing you described, the team being in the midst of and David Poile's old phrase was competitive rebuild, and that's what this has become.
Yeah, it's very impressive. You know what? I got to know Ryan O'Reilly. You know, I had reffed him since he was a rookie in the league, but I kind of got to know him well when he lived here in St. Louis, where I live. And, you know, okay, he was a member at our golf course, and he's just a tremendous guy. And I really think that was a smart pickup by Barry, don't you?
Yes. He made, I think, three very important signings this last offseason: Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, and Luke Shen. They all have contributed heavily, I think, to the atmosphere in the room here and what has happened on the ice.
Well, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe Gustav Nyquist. He had 75 points this year.
Yes, right? Sir.
Like when I saw that, I'm like, I kind of thought he'd be out of the league a year ago. Like, you know, but so why do you think he's transformed, or he's kind of brought his game to another notch? Because of Andrew?
Well, because of Andrew, but also because his line mates, I think, tremendous interworkings with Ryan O'Reilly, with Philip Forsberg. Those guys, it's. I hate to be sounding like somebody that did an old comedy bit, but they have ESPN working with each other. They really right. know what the other's thinking at all times.
Yeah, and you know what? O'Reilly's got 69 points this year, Nyquist 75. Tell me about this Tommy Novak, because I don't know anything about him, but he's got 45 points. What yeah. type of player is he?
Very slippery and very creative. He's a kid from Minnesota who tells me right off the top, as we always ask the Minnesotans, are they cake eaters? No, he's not a cake eater. He's somebody who knows how to just get in there and work. And then he does the job. He, very creative. And I think he has become extremely confident in his game, following guys like Ryan O'Reilly and coming on through as they have. And another part of the success of this team is the fourth line.
Right.
Cole Smith playing on the left wing. In the middle, Michael McCarron, or as the nickname here in Nashville is, Big Sexy.
Yeah.
And on the right side, here is the guy that Kiefer Sherwood, who gets overlooked, I think, a lot as well. But their chemistry gets the game started, and then O'Reilly and company come on, and it just goes from there.
What do you think? You know, Roman Josi, I thought, deserved the lost my train of thought. What's the trophy? The Norris Trophy. Was it 2 years ago that I thought he should have?
Yes.
He should have got it this year. Quinn Hughes is at 91, Cale Makar's at 89, and Yossi's at 85. This guy, I forget what game it was. Was it last week or the week before? 2 goals, 2 assists.
Yes.
Like, the guy's a stud, Pete. He's unbelievable. He is just, I hope he gets the recognition. Not that he needs it, but I hope he wins a Norris Trophy one day, because he certainly, in my mind, deserves it.
Kind of like the Predators had for a long time with Shea Weber, when you think about it. And Roman was a guy who came in after Ryan Suter left as a free agent to go to Minnesota.
Right.
And he then had to become the Robin to Shea Weber's Batman. And it was like there was no drop off whatsoever. He just stepped right in and got the job done.
It's unbelievable. Did I read that correctly today that you guys, the Nashville's going to play Vancouver in the first round?
That's what I ascertained after watching Vancouver last night and going on NHL.com, where it said it was all locked in. Now, I've not seen that subsequently today, but it does appear that will be the case. So the last time the Predators met Vancouver in the playoffs was 2011, and that was the first time the Predators, that 2011 season, first time they ever advanced out of the first round.
You know what? That's funny you brought that up. I was working one of the games in that series.
Yes.
In Nashville. And I don't know if you remember the play. We were either late in the third period or we were in overtime. And Ryan Kessler, Ryan Kessler and David Perron, and I love David Perron. I love Kessler. But they were the best at pretending like they were hooked and they would chicken wing the stick.
Chicken winging, yes.
Right? And I don't know if you remember the play. It was inside Vancouver's inside Vancouver's bench, which would have been Nashville was attacking.
Right.
And Kessler chicken winged it, and I got sucked in, and I called a penalty against Shea. And they of course, they had to score in the power play. They couldn't kill it.
Right.
And Vancouver lost the game. And I forget, it might have been it was David Legwand. And I love Leggy. Would Leggy have been playing in 2011?
Yes.
Yes. And he said in the newspaper the next day, he goes, Pielsey must have been in a hurry to get to Tootsie's that night. and needless to say, that was the end of my playoffs that year because of that one call. It's unbelievable how one call sticks in your mind. That's 12, 13 years ago. And I remember it like it was yesterday. But Kessler and Perron were real, and Perron still looked good at that.
Yeah. Well, as a baseball fan, not that I would hold any grudges as a Cardinals fan, but I still have them from Don Denkinger in 1985.
Right. Yeah.
The play at first base in game 6 of the World Series. And the best thing, and God bless him, we lost him yesterday, but Whitey Herzog, he held a reunion of that team in 2015. And he invited Don Denkinger to come to the gathering.
Did he really?
And Don was checking with other umpires as to whether they thought he should go. He finally decided to go, and Whitey presented him with a gift. And it was a nice watch with a Braille face.
No.
Yes.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is funny. But you know what? That probably... Because at the time, I was living in Canada, but certainly living in St. Louis the last 23 years, I've seen that play over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Don Denkinger had death threats. Like, they wanted to run him. Like the Cardinal fans were irate. And I bet you Whitey doing that, bringing him in, might have helped him have some closure on that whole thing, right?
I'm absolutely certain that that's the case. Yeah, without any question whatsoever. And it was nice how well he had that watch gift wrapped so that Don had adequate surprise as he was unwrapping it.
That is phenomenal. I love that. Yeah, I didn't know you were, all these years, I didn't know you were a Cardinal fan. I went to the home opener. How did you become a Cardinal fan?
I saw the problems, and growing up in West Central Illinois, that my father had being a Cubs fan. And but I absolutely adored Stan Musial in the late 50s, early 60s. And dad made sure I got tickets to Stan's last game at Wrigley Field
No
in
way.
September of 63. Yes, and still on my phone, I have the recording of his last home run that was hit when the Cardinals were in that big run down the stretch in 63, trying to catch the Dodgers.
How old would you have been at that game?
I was 12.
12 years old. I thought, yeah, 10 or 12 years old. That must have been an unreal moment because Stan Musial, as you know, is an icon here. And well, he's an
Oh,
icon in baseball, right?
yeah.
And
Going to the restaurant was always a treat.
yeah, exactly. So well, let's stay on baseball for a second. How do you think the Cardinals are going to do this year?
I'm hoping that a local youngster, Sonny Gray, is able to perform like Bob Gibson, because I think they're going to need that. I was sorry that he wasn't able to open the season on time, but came back in with a pretty good opening couple of starts. So happy to see that. But the pitching is always going to be the situation, and it's going to be a little bit more difficult now without that great man back of the plate, Yadi Molina, to guide the pitching
I
staff.
know. I know. I know. You know what? And we were so spoiled for so many years because with Yadi and then I brought this up. I went to the home opener with my wife and you remember longtime linesman Derek Amell.
Oh yeah.
Derek was a great linesman. He worked many, I worked the cup finals with Nashville. He's a phenomenal linesman. He came into town because we refereed a event for Kelly Chase.
Centene Center. Yeah.
Yeah. At Centene for Kelly Chase's puck cancer event. Garth Brooks was in and Dirks Bentley. And it was unbelievable.
Great hockey fans, those guys.
Oh, it was great. I gave Dirks a penalty shot. He scored on the penalty shot.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. The crowd was going crazy. It was phenomenal. But I said, we were spoiled those years because Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan, they might have been the best manager pitching coach duo that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they knew when to, Tony La Russa would knew when to bring in a reliever to match him up against a certain batter. And we're spoiled because I don't think Ollie Marmol, you know, and he doesn't have the experience, but I don't have a lot of confidence in him, but La Russa and Dave Duncan were unbelievable, Pete.
Plus the way the game's rules go now, you can't do those matchups as easily as those
right.
guys could. You've got a minimum of three batters to face.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. So, UC Saros, where you guys are, I think, looks like going to play Vancouver.
Yeah.
Thatcher Demko, do you know his situation at all? He's been out.
He looked like, good last night. He looked good last night. And that was the first game since, what, March 9th?
Right.
And the knee injury. But I didn't detect any difficulties with his movements or anything like that.
But I think this series is a series because, listen, if you ask the GM of Vancouver, just lost, Jim my Rutherford.
My former backup goalie with the Kings, Jim Rutherford, yes.
That's right. If you ask Jim and Rick Tocchet at the beginning of the year, that they were going to have the record that they have, I don't think that they would think that. So I think Nashville, because of the style they play, I think they can beat Vancouver. Don't you?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, the way they played the last 2 months, I think there is no place where they would be overwhelmed by any opponent.
Do you think Nashville has that their weak spot would be scoring goals? Like, is that going to be the thing that hurts them, or the power play? How's their power play? You've seen it more than me.
The power play is in the 20s. So that's going to make things a little bit difficult, but they have done an outstanding job there. I think particularly the last three games, they were like 5 out of 7 with a man advantage. So if you convert anywhere near that, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, UC Saros can he's like Vasilevsky. He can not only steal a game, but he can steal a series for you too. So
I've always said, after various games on the road in particular, I was waiting for the sheriff to show up at the Predators room with a summons to arrest UC for stealing a couple of points.
I love it. I loved working in Nashville. Those fans, man, they are passionate. Like, when they, I remember when they first went to Nashville, people were like, Nashville, you know, it's an unbelievable hockey market. They love their Predators there. I love it. You've been watching the race on the East and the East. What did you, I didn't know until I read it today that Torts didn't know that Detroit had won.
Right.
If he knew that, would he have still pulled the goalie?
Great question. And I would love to be at their season ender press conference to try to find out. I know he said he wasn't going to go over everything last night, but that those were questions that he would field when it came time, as long as Larry Brooks didn't ask them.
Right, exactly.
But, and that's maybe a little bit of an inside joke, but Torts, I knew from my time in Buffalo, and great person to work with. He and John Muckler are a tremendous combination. Mm-hmm. And then when he went, and you know, he won a Calder Cup over Barry Trotz in 96 in the American League.
Oh, he was coaching Rochester back then, right? That's right. And Barry was coaching the Portland Capitals or I forget what they're. Yeah. But yeah, it'll be, you know what, because my son was watching the game with me. We were watching the Detroit game. We were flipping back to the Philly game. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping Philly would win that game because I wanted to see some more hockey for the next two nights that meant something, right? I wanted to see Pittsburgh and the Islanders and this is not a shot at Ovi at all. I wanted to see Pittsburgh make it. I wanted to see Sid make it because I think he deserves it. The season that he has had is remarkable at 36 years old. He was just trying to will that team into the playoffs. After they got rid of their top goal scorer in Jake Guentzel, that guy, Pete, he just amazes me what a pro he is. He could have easily said, you know what, that's it, we're done for the year. And he didn't.
He's still ready to dent his parents' dryer.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what? I don't know if he's ever played in the World Championships, but this might be a year that he would go over and play in it because I think he feels like he has some unfinished business right now, and I don't think he's ready to sit at home and watch hockey or not watch hockey. But I was rooting, and you know what? Detroit has more wins than Nashville than Washington. Yeah. I just don't see Washington being they're matched up against the Rangers in the first round. You know what? Maybe Charlie Sideburns Lindgren can pull something out of his rear end. I don't know, but I think that could possibly be a short series. But you know what? Playoffs are the best, as you know. What do you think about Boston, Toronto?
I think. And I've got so many friends, having lived in Buffalo for a long time, I have so many friends who are Maple Leaf diehards, and they tend to die very hard when these things happen, to be certain. There was nothing better than walking out of the Odd in the old days or out of the current building after the Leafs had blown a lead and the Sabres had come back to win, because... Well, and I worry about the people who then would cross the Peace Bridge,
right,
and go back north on the QEW to go back to Greater Metro Toronto and see how it all worked out. But I think that, well, what is it that goes up on X or on Twitter right now? They have the total number of days since the last time that the Leafs beat the Boston Bruins. They've got the total number of days down.
Oh, wow.
On that countdown, not to mention looking back to 1967. And then, of course, they always had a really nice dig this many days since an AHL Zamboni driver beat the Leafs in Carolina.
Exactly. David Ayers.
Yes.
A couple more things. You know what? You mentioned Buffalo. We had JR and I had Matthew Barnaby on a few weeks ago. Yep. Barney's awesome. He corrected me. I go, yeah, Barney, you know, Buffalo's on a 6-year rebuild. He goes, Timmy, it's more like a 10-year rebuild. I don't know what's going to, it's sad, Pete, because as you know, those fans, they're so, they love their Sabres. They're so passionate, but something's got to change there. It shouldn't take 10 years to rebuild a hockey team.
No, it should not. And, you know, and we're going back in many ways to when the tank was on in order to hope that they could get somebody who's playing at Edmonton right now, but they got Jack Eichel instead.
Right.
That's been a while now. That's been a
while. I know. That actually might have changed their, well, it would have changed their franchise. You're absolutely right. They should have got McDavid, and they wound up with Jack Eichel, and Jack's having a tremendous career. So
is he ever, but unfortunately for them, it's in Vegas.
It's in Vegas. Exactly. Well, listen, buddy, I will let you go. I don't know what Claudia's got in mind for you tonight for dinner, but please tell her I said hello. I love you. I appreciate you coming on. I'm glad you're good and healthy. I will be rooting for the Preds in the playoffs. I know the fans there are so passionate, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on with me today.
Thank you for the invitation. As an original Blue, Terry Crisp would always say, bring the passion. And bring, he certainly the passion. Did that.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, and have a great
night.
Thank
you, Jim. You too.
Thank you. Well, that's my good buddy, Pete Weber. He is an unbelievable guy. He's the original voice of the Nashville Predators. He's an icon in Nashville. The people just absolutely love him. When Nashville got their expansion team, it was him and Terry Crisp, and they were awesome. So I appreciate him coming on. That was awesome. He's just phenomenal. But anyway, let's talk about the matchups in the East. We've got Boston, Toronto. This is going to be a cage match. I cannot wait. I think, and no slight to the Bruins, but I think this is the year. There's Jimmy Fox. Jimmy, how are you, buddy?
We're doing great. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. I just had Pete Weber on, and Pete said that he was with you when you were a young rookie.
Correct. Yeah. Pete, first year here, he was, it was mostly radio back then, right? We didn't have a lot of TV, but man, is he fun to be around. I'll tell you that.
He's such a good guy. You know, he's an icon in Nashville. You know, him and Crispy, you know, were the original announcers that, as you know, being an expansion team, they had to sell hockey in Nashville, and it was because of their personalities in Nashville that they should be credited with a lot of the success that they have with that fan base because of Pete Weber and Terry Crisp, don't you think?
Yeah, you have to turn people onto it. It's not necessarily natural to that market. And I mean, pre-Gretzky, to a certain extent, we went through the same thing here in LA where you find yourself maybe on the back pages until the playoffs, and the playoffs roll around. Then if you go far, and then of course in 12 and 14, we end up winning a Stanley Cup. That changes everything. But yeah, it's a whole different thing when you're out there selling and educating at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Before we get into the LA Kings, I do want our listeners to know, you know, especially the people on the East Coast that maybe don't stay up late and watch the LA Kings games, I want you to be honest and tell me, because when you and Bob Miller, so I came in the league in 98 and retired in 2021, I want you to know, our guys at training camp, in the dressing room, whatever, hey, this, and I won't mention names, this guy carves the refs all the time. This guy, we know the broadcasters with every team that listen, at the end of the day, you work for the LA Kings. You would want the LA Kings to win as any broadcaster would with any team. But you and Bob really were good to the officials, Foxy. Like, you really were, even if it was a bad call, you'd be like, well, you know what? He might like want to have that one back again. Were you always like that when you first came into the game?
No. And when I played, I was awful. I was awful with the refs because, you know, my stature, I was an average player. You know, if you're a star, you can go after him a little bit more. I went after him a little bit too much. And then when I went to broadcasting, to be honest, maybe it's not the same for everyone, but coming from a player, then you're in a broadcast booth. I was a homer at the beginning. I was a homer.
Sure.
And then I think each year that goes by, you learn to become more objective and see the game. And then finally, I found myself, you know, with all these replays and slow motion and stop it here and all this. Yeah, it's easy to officiate a game when you can do it off a replay monitor. I mean, let's do it live. Let's do it real time. And that's what I try to do. If I see it live and I think the referee made a mistake, I'll give it to him.
Right.
If I need a replay to take a look at it, I'm not going to get on the ref. He's there. He's got to call it real time. He can't. And half the time, you know, they see everything and we don't. We need the replay. So that's kind of a rule I have. And, you know, I appreciate your comments. You know, I'll be honest, when I'm not doing games and watching them,
yeah,
I'm all over the refs. When I get into a game, I'm doing a job. I'm trying to show respect. I have to try to tell the truth. Again, it's on there. If
100%. If
you missed it, but
100%.
If I need a replay to see it, then I'm not going to be overly critical.
Well, and you mentioned the word that we use a lot in the officiating world is real time. And you're absolutely right. Like on social media, I'll get people sending me clips and I'm like, guys, you've watched it six times. Like, yeah, the ref missed it, but you've watched it six times. Watch it once in real time. So I wanted you to know that you had that respect from our officials and maybe you can give me a little insight on the Kings. Todd McClellan, who I love, you know, I got to know him and Kelly Chase are very good friends. And I got to know Todd well over the years, and he's just a tremendous person, as you know. What happened where in October, November, it looked like they could win the President's Trophy, and then all of a sudden it's not like he's a bad coach, and then they lose 17 games in a row. How does that happen?
You know, I've looked at the numbers. You delve into the analytics nowadays, and I do too. I want to learn as much as I can. And you know what, Tim, for the first 14 of those games, there wasn't a dramatic change. The numbers stayed the same. It did tail off a little bit. I'll say this, and we talked to Ted, you know, the one thing Todd did the best is the more it got bad, the better he was with us.
Right.
You know, he would let us know what's going on. And it was one of those things where the room was eating itself up.
Yeah.
It was just, they were so down. And maybe because the start was so good, then, you know, they called the first 24 and then the next 24. The first 24, we were phenomenal. Next 24, not that good. But, and even just talking to the players who respect Todd.
Right.
It was one of those, and I don't think it was one of those, he lost the room. And the way I explained it at the time, and I still say it the same way. The team was trying to find its soul, not its identity. They know what they had to do to be a successful. They lost something they couldn't, and then it just started eating themselves alive. The atmosphere, Tim, at the end was awful.
Yeah.
And the best possible thing that could happen was the All-Star break.
Right.
The best, because we had, you know, the All-Star, and then we had like 9 days off. Best possible thing. For the guys to just get away. And of course, that's when Todd was let go. He told us, he said, yeah, everyone's waiting for something to happen.
Well,
winning streak, or, and you get into that mindset where you're just, man, it was really down here.
Well, as you know, good people unfortunately get fired in this business. Craig Berube, who's a phenomenal person, And him and Todd both, I'm sure, will be coaching at the beginning of next season somewhere. It's just it's the nature of this business. And you know, you go, Craig Berube won the first cup ever to come to St. Louis, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's getting fired, and that had to be an extremely difficult decision by Doug Armstrong. So at the end of the day, good people get fired and changes need to be made. One guy that before I get into the people that I love with LA is, I'll get into Doughty and Kopi and these guys, is JR and I, maybe it's not justifiable, but I think it is, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Foxy, to me, it's time for him to start. I looked at his stats today and I said, okay, he had 40 points, I think, if I'm looking at this right, 40 points. And you want it out of Columbus. You want it out of Winnipeg. Now you're in LA playing for tremendous owner, GM, the management group there with Luke Robitaille. You're wearing flip-flops, going to practice. Things can't get any better. So I'll give him a little grace, because I remember a few players over the years that when they go to a new team, it does take them a while to adjust, and people can't understand that. And they're like, well, unfortunately, that's just the reality of our sport. Now is the time for him to step up in the playoffs and show why he got an 8-year deal at eight, whatever it is. Do you agree?
It's the way to redeem the whole season. I mean, when he was traded for, the whole talk was strength down the middle. You know, you're going against, at that time, you know, the contenders in the Pacific, still Vegas and Edmonton. So strong down the middle. So we had to match that. Now, we were given the scouting report on him, and, you know, we'd seen him play, obviously, but it was playoff oriented. He's had some good playoff series.
Right.
You know, he can really latch on. I'm not talking about production. The playoff series he's had where he's been effective have been mostly the physical part, you know, getting in there and grinding it out and making it difficult on the other team. So if he can do that, and then the regular season is forgotten. There's no question about that. Now, there's a couple just about PL. His style is visually, it's not attractive.
Right.
The way he skates, the way he stands up, the way he goes into contact. He's a straight ahead stand-up player. He stands up tall, knees are not bent. He swoops a little bit with his stick. His skating stride is not all that graceful. So, you know, the baggage he came with, right? He came with baggage you know, the effort and the shift he had in Columbus. Remember that?
They replayed that shift. Certainly. Yeah.
Well, he gives off a lot of those visuals. He does. He gives off visuals that are just, ooh, it doesn't look good. It's just not, you know, going off to the bench, changing. So those little things I think he's worked on. Out of the All-Star break, he was a completely different player. Jim Hiller and the coaching staff came up with a point system for him where they would give him points for non-scoring situations. And he did a real good job. The way I look at it is this. He does not have to live up to the 8.5 until Andrei Kopitar retires.
Right.
You know, when he was traded from Winnipeg and he was given the big raise, he's not all of a sudden twice as good of a player because he makes twice as much money. He's the same player. We need him to be 25 and 65. That's what we need. He didn't get anywhere close to that. And the way to redeem himself is in the playoffs.
Are you amazed that Joe Smith is here? Joe's with the Athletic, Foxy, covering the Wild and covered Tampa for a long time. So thanks for joining, Joe. We'll get to you in a second. I want to ask Foxy a few more questions. Drew Doughty, I got to know Drew, I think it might have been his first, second, third year. We had a charity golf tournament in St. John, New Brunswick, back in Canada, and Drew was there and a bunch of other guys. And I just automatically liked the guy. I liked his attitude. I liked the way he plays. He was always one of my favorite guys. And he can lose it on the refs. See, there's no, like, he's very outspoken and passionate and so on. But I'm amazed. I looked today and his stats for a guy that, you know, is well into his 30s now. He, when I see Drew, it was when he was in Toronto months ago, Drew Doughty wants to be the guy. He wants to be, hey, I look at me, not in a bad way, but I want, some guys don't want to be the guy. He wants to be the guy. And I'm amazed how well, not amazed, but I'm impressed of how well he's been playing, Foxy.
I'll be amazed if he's not selected and it'll be announced tomorrow as the MVP of the Kings this year. I voted for him as the MVP. A lot of good candidates, you know, Kopitar, who does everything, in Fiala and Kempe and all these, but I think Drew will be the MVP of the team, leads the NHL in ice time. He's one away from a career high in goals. The way I look at it, Tim, is this, and you know, there's the saying, he hates to lose. With Drew, this is this, and I don't know if it makes sense. He's not afraid to lose.
Right.
He'll just throw it all out there. And then at the end, if he loses, okay, I'm going home. From the first day I saw him to right now, and I've said it to Drew many times, so Drew, don't ever change. He's like a kid on a frozen pond.
Yeah, he is.
They're playing. He loves the game, and just keep doing that. But this year, he took a step up. He really did. I mean, he is, you know, Kings are going to make the playoffs. You know, who knows what seed it's going to be, whether it's third in the Pacific or, you know, second wild card. But I would say Drew Doughty is the MVP of this team this year, just for everything he's done.
Well, and I won't keep you much longer, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Anze Kopitar, because he reached out to me when I got caught in the hot mic. So I'll text him every once in a while. He is one of my favorite guys, Jim. He's just an incredible person. You know, he's getting long in the tooth. He's still had 70 points this year. I felt, you know, JR and I did the show, I think it was a day or two after he had his 1,000th game, and both of us were pissed off because that's when they shit the bed when they played Buffalo at home, right?
Yeah.
On Anze Kopitar's night, and we're like, you can't win it for Anze. Like, oh, JR was at, he, JR went to the game. And we're like, and it, because it bothered me because I love the guy so much that I'm like, I wanted him to win that game, you know, no matter how many they had lost before, for him to feel good. But if you see him, please tell him I say hi, said hi, because he is just a tremendous person, tremendous hockey player. And has it been finalized? I don't think it's been finalized yet who you guys are playing in the first round, has it?
No, we can play either Vancouver, Edmonton, or Dallas. So that'll be determined based on a few different things. But
yeah, and haven't you?
Like, for people who, you know, we won a couple cups and all, but I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't see him as much as most. By the time he retires, he's going to be top 30 all time in scoring. And he's known as a defensive player.
Correct.
So that consistency, now he still has a chance to lead the team in scoring this year, which would be crazy again. But some of the records he has and will be getting, and I'm talking about like playing with Drew Doughty and how many times both guys have assisted on a goal. Playing with Dustin Brown, Drew Doughty, Jonathan Quick, how many times those four guys? They're up in the Howe, DeVecchio, Lindsay, like they're in that category. That's how much of an effect the length, longevity, and success of their careers. I mean, they're up there with the all-time greats. So,
well,
Hall of Famer, no question.
Well, and that's exactly what I was just going to say. And we know the Toronto media, and it's not to bash them, but Kopi plays in L.A. He doesn't get the recognition that he would if he played in the Canadian market. And there's no question his numbers warrant a Hall of Fame induction someday. And and rightfully so. So, well, listen, good luck in the playoffs. I'll be listening to you. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. JR is traveling in Europe right now. That guy travels more than the president of the United States, I think. So he's all over the map. But I will tell JR that you were on and were gracious enough to take your time to sit with us tonight. So thanks a lot, Foxy. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
Take care. Joe Smith, how are you, buddy?
Doing well. How are you doing?
How are things?
Doing well. Doing well. Wrapping up one season here in Minnesota, and then looking forward to seeing what the playoffs have to show here.
So, now, how long did you cover Tampa for?
So I started even as like a kind of the backup in 2010-11, and then I moved like full-time beat writer in 2013-14. So right. It was up until before last season. So about a decade or a little less than that, but obviously saw some incredible teams and players in the three straight runs of the Cup final, and then the two game sevens that they lost in the conference final to both the Penguins and the Capitals that end up winning the Cup. So certainly seeing kind of almost a near dynasty in the making, which was pretty incredible.
Before we get into the matchups in the East and your thoughts on Tampa, because you have covered them so long, maybe I'm wrong. Kind of what I expected from Minnie this year. We knew Dallas, Colorado. Who am I missing?
Winnipeg.
There? Winnipeg.
Yeah.
You know, we knew that they were going to be good this year. Can you explain to me, because I meant to ask Russo about this a few months ago, and can you explain to our listeners, because I Minnesota is actually, in my mind, in a good spot with the young talent that they have. Brock Faber is a phenomenal player. Kirill Kaprizov. Can you explain the whole cap situation to me? On, we'll say the cap. What's the cap now? 89?
No, you wish it was 89. I think it's like 82.5 now.
82. Yeah. But because Billy Guerin bought out Parise and Suter, they can't spend as much as other teams can spend. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they have one more year at this point where they have a $14.7 million in basically a dead cap. For next season is the last season that they'll have that full number, and then it'll go down to like 1 point something for a few years after that. So that's basically you're spending at about
68
68 as opposed to 82.5 or 83. That's kind of the number that they're kind of working with at this point.
That's okay. I didn't know the numbers. So for our listeners, like that's a big handicap for Billy Guerin. You know, you're trying to build a team and build a competitive team, but you're only really spending $68 million and everyone else is spending $82 million, correct?
Correct. And, obviously to be fair, they chose that position by buying out those two guys too. They'd still be paying them anyways if they were here. You know, Ryan Suter is still playing. Zach Parise is still playing his last year, playing for the Colorado Avalanche. So, that certainly makes it difficult in a sense that you have no margin for error. If you have an injury, a guy's a down season, there's no wiggle room of just going in free agency and fixing your problems. You essentially have what you have. And if guys underperform or you don't get the goaltending that you thought you would get, you'll miss the playoffs, which is, I think, what happened this year with this group.
What do you think precipitated Billy, because I love Billy Guerin. I've known, I reffed him for many years and friends off the ice and so on. What do you think precipitated getting rid of Dean and bringing in John Hines? Because I have a lot of respect for Dean, but I have a lot of respect for John Hines. And before you answer, Pete Weber or Foxy and I were talking earlier, unfortunately, Todd McClellan got fired and Craig Berube and this year, I think we've seen, last I looked, I think it may be up to 9. It's definitely at least 7 coaches that have been fired. And I think JR and I mentioned this on the show a few weeks ago. My feeling about it, why so many coaches get fired now, is because of the salary cap constraints. They can't make the blockbuster deals. They can't, you know, I'm aging myself, but the Doug Gilmore from Calgary to Toronto, and there were five players going each way. You know what I mean? Like, they can't make those trades anymore. So did Dean lose the room? Why do you think he got fired?
I don't think he necessarily lost the room. I think when you're 5-10-4 after two seasons of 100 points and making the playoffs, there's going to be some questions asked. And I think he might have taken the fall for some underperforming by his team early on. And like you said, you can't trade players or shake things up, like you said. And so the easiest thing to do, or unfortunately the easiest thing to do, is to wake the players up, is fire the coach and make a change. And I like Dean Evason. I respect him as a man, as a coach. I think he did the best with what he had. Like you mentioned, the dead cap hits that he still was dealing with going into it. But clearly they were a team that needed something to happen. And Bill Guerin, even after, or right before the firing, he went into the room before their Sweden trip and kind of laid into the guys. Like, usually you don't see GMs go into a locker room and kind of lay into a team, like, not say read the riot act, but kind of say, hey, this is not good enough. Because this roster has been set for a bit. He made some moves to extend Ryan Hartman and Marcus Foligno and Matt Zuccarello before this season. There would be UFAs this summer if they got to that point. So he was buying into his core, and that group was obviously struggling. So he tried to do anything he could before letting go of Dean Evason, which I knew was a difficult decision for him to make, knowing their relationship. But it did provide a spark at that time. And I think the Wild had like the 13th best record in the National Hockey League since John Hines took over. And that included a 1-7-1 stretch in end of December when they had Gustafsson and Kaprizov injured and Foligno injured and Zuccarello injured. So, you know, half the league has changed coaches the last 2 years. It's not a very healthy league for NHL head coaches, which is why if I'm David Carl and University of Denver right now and won a championship, I'm like, I'm staying in Denver right now. Like, this is not a very healthy league for coaches to come in.
That's a good point. Exactly.
So I think Hines is a good coach, and he's going to have a full summer to go over the clips, and you got to understand the players and personnel and the deficiencies they have. But, you know, I don't think it was Dean Evason's fault that they were off to 5-10-4 start. He was part of the problem, but he wasn't the full problem.
I know you were watching the game. Was it last week? Yeah, it was last week when Minnesota was playing Colorado. Were you just blown away? Like, I've got a son that's 12 years old, and I said, Bronson, come here in the morning. I was showing him the three highlight goals of McKinnon. Were you just blown away by, like, he's beating Middleton and like defensemen that are NHL defensemen? And were you just like, I can't believe this guy is doing this?
It was as an impressive of a performance as I've seen covering the league. And we all know McKinnon's one of the best players in the world, no question, MVP candidate for a reason, but like, there wasn't not many guys that could have stopped him, giving him a head start the way he had in the neutral zone. You give him time and space and he's going to beat you no matter what. And he made people look like pylons when they shouldn't have looked like that way. Very incredible game. And I asked John Hines after that, because, you know, he does it to a lot of teams, not just the Wild. He does it to a lot of teams.
Right.
But I was like, you know, the Wild were 0-10-1 going into that game against the top three teams in Central Division. I'm like, what's missing with your team? And he goes, you know, they're faster, they're bigger, and they're deeper. And that's a lot to overcome when you have those three big things in your team that are missing from the top three teams in division. But they have McKinnon. The Wild have Kaprizov, who's a top 10 player, in my opinion, in the league. But that was just another one of those moments where, if he's making an MVP case for himself, that was one of those signature moments that you'll look at going forward. And I might vote differently in the MVP race, but I think he has certainly made his case for the MVP.
If you were to pick Kucherov, McKinnon, or McDavid, you would pick McKinnon right now?
It's really tough. Kucherov, McKinnon for me, 1-2. I think I might lean a little more towards Kucherov because of the team that they – I know the team. I know this past year of how much guys that they've lost and where – you know, they lost Vasilevskiy the first 2 months of the season, and he's literally carried that team for most nights of the season, and the depth that they lost in through the salary cap. Like, he's literally like 50 points ahead of like Braden Point, who's a superstar in this league, right? Like, and right. Steven Stamkos, like, he's not playing with average players. He's playing with other superstars, and he's lapping the field, and they've needed him to. So it's not a stretch to think that the Lightning would be, not say a lottery position, that they would be out of the playoffs without the kind of season that Nikita Kucherov has put together. They have an .897 save percentage this year, and that's the best they've come to, you know, and they're in a top wild card position and going to play the Florida Panthers in the first round. So I get MacKinnon. I think he is deserving. I think if they give it to McDavid, it is deserving, but I don't think people should fault Nikita Kucherov for being a little nonchalant in some drills in the All-Star game, all of a sudden give him slack for that and not make the MVP. He's been the most valuable player to his team this year. Well,
and I agree. And to our listeners, like, the Hart Trophy is for the MVP of your team. And I agree, like, you know, Edmonton's got, still has Dreisaitl. You know, they continued to win when Connor was out of the lineup. Nate MacKinnon, I'm with you. It could be 1A, 1B with him and Kucherov. I would give it to Kucherov too. 142 points. They are not in the position they're in right now without Nikita Kucherov. They're on the outside looking in if he's not there. So give me your, I won't keep you much longer, but give me your feeling, because you have seen Tampa a lot. Give me your feeling on the Tampa Florida series, and what way do you think it's going to go? Because it's going to be, because I would not want to play Tampa. There's a lot of teams I wouldn't want to play, but John Cooper, you know, I got to know Coop, Joe, Kelly Chase hired Coop for the Texas Arcana Bandits, and him and Holly owned the team, and they brought the Bandits to St. Louis.
And
they were called the St. Louis Bandits, and that's when I got to know Coop, and we're at OB Clark, so you've probably been there, and, you know, Chaser and I and Coop, and we're drinking, and like, this, I'm just, you know, hanging out with this guy that's a North American League, because then he went to Green Bay for the USHL, and not knowing that the guy is going to be the phenomenal coach that he is, what do you think is going to happen in this series?
Well, I've covered a few of these Tampa Florida series, and they're tremendous. There's like a lot of high action packed back and forth. And if you're right, like, I think Tampa's not a team you want to draw in the first round, but Florida, you saw that last night against the Maple Leafs, how talented they are and how much they can be relentless. So I think it'll be a longer series than people would think, in that based on the 1-7 or 2-7 matchup. If Vasilevsky is back to the way he was before the injury, this can be a really tough series for the Florida Panthers. So I don't know if I can say that the Lightning are going to win, but I think that they, despite being the struggle the last three or four games end of the regular season, we've seen them struggle end of seasons before when they won the Stanley Cups, but they're not as deep as they were before, no question. But I think still they have the horses and the core group, and who knows if this is Steven Stamkos' last run with this group. So I think it's going to be a really great series back and forth, and I think the Lightning, if they get the goaltending from Vasilevsky, it can be a difference maker. But I love to watch seven games of this, even if I'm not covering it. I love to watch seven games of those two teams going back and forth, and getting Duclair and Dumba have really been a lifeblood at the deadline for those two. Don't forget that. Really bucks personality of that group.
100%. Duclair and Dumba, absolutely. Like, Anthony Duclair, he can be a difference maker in some games. I love how he plays. You talk about that Florida Toronto game last night. Did you see, this is what bothers me about Toronto, is their captain is getting manhandled by the bench, right? By Matthew Tkachuk. He's, you know, I've known Matthew since he's been 4 years old. He's getting manhandled, and William Nylander makes a line change. He jumps over the boards instead of getting involved in the scrum. Like, yeah, you got Domi and you got McCann and you got Bertuzzi and Ryan Reeves, but let's be honest, it's a different ball game in the playoffs. And Ryan Reeves, if he plays 4 minutes a night, that's probably the max he's going to play. He's not going to play 6 or 7 minutes a night, because he just can't. He can't keep up with the pace of play. That's the problem I have with this team, is I don't see that pushback from them. I don't see that fight from the leaders of the – it's good for those guys to do that, the Domis, Bertuzzis, But guess what? When you have Florida, you have Matthew Tkachuk, you have the leaders in the team that'll fight back. I want to see Tavares fight back. I want to see Austin Matthews fight back. But I don't know if that's in their DNA, Joe.
Well, I mean, they made a push last year and won a round series, which was a big deal for them. And I think they've
But before you go on, I thought Tampa outplayed them in that series last year.
They played better in that series than they played the year before when Tampa won. Tampa played better last year than they did the year before when they won the series. I agree with you. I think they've been gradually building to be a more physical team. I think when have you heard of the Leafs being one of the top teams in hits? And they've been one of the more top teams in hits this season regarding that. So I think they're trying to change that narrative. It only changes in the playoffs, I think. It only changes if you make a playoff run. But I get where you're coming from. You're bringing these new guys in here to bring that initial toughness and grit and pushback. But that only happens inherently. It happens not with your best physical players. It's from everybody. It's the Sorellis. It's the Hagels. It doesn't mean you can be the biggest guy in the world to have pushback, right? So I think that'll only be determined in that legacy of that team only be determined in the playoffs. And so I don't want to prejudge them yet, but that's something they've been trying to address that in their group, I think, the last couple of years. And we'll see if that changes. And if it gets the Boston Bruins is the biggest test you'll have, right? The first round series, if they can push back. It's Pat Maroon in that group.
I think if this is the year that Toronto is going to beat Boston, I think this is the year that they could possibly do it. Jim Montgomery's a friend of mine. He's a phenomenal coach. I think he's done a tremendous job this year for what they have in the lineup, losing Bergeron and Krejci. I think, but they have good goaltending too in Allmark and Swayman, and that could be the difference maker, because I'm not so sure about Samsonov. Joseph Wohl is a St. Louis kid, but he's young. That whole series could come down to goaltending. But if this is the year that Toronto is going to beat Boston, I think that it might happen. But it'll be interesting. We'll see in 3 or 4 days when the playoffs start. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day, covering the NHL and so on, and coming on. And maybe we'll talk again during the playoffs, and I sincerely appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me anytime, and give Russo some crap when you get him on the podcast next time.
I will. He's the best. We'll have a cigar with him. He loves his cigars.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks to our sponsors, Bet Online, Whiskey in the Wild, and Protected Neck Guards. Shout out to Believe TV and Caffeine TV. And we'll see you on Monday. The playoffs will have gone on for a couple days. We'll have lots to talk about on Monday on the weekend update. And then we'll have another show of Snipes and Stripes on Wednesday. Thank you very much, and have a great night.